52-66. That's right. That's right now, and that's you. And we would love to give you a copy of Michael Mead's DVDs, and that will include Touching the Soul of the World, and it will include the other one whose paper I cannot find right now.
The World is Churning.
You get your choice of those for your $100 contribution this morning. That's $8 and call it 35 cents. Call it $8.50.
You can
okay, just
that.
Call it $8.50. A month. If you would like to do the monthly electronic funds membership, it sustains us. It's easy on your pocketbook. It sustains our finances. It's a great way to go to support your community. You know, Michael Mead was just talking about that symbiotic relationship of the individual and the community, from the one to the whole. Community needs awakened individuals, and individuals need community.
877-552-66.
This is your moment. 877-500-5266. Or online, kboo.fm. Join us.
KBOO would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Crema Coffee and Bakery, located at 2728 Southeast Ankeny, serving local coffee and baked goods every day from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Lunch was provided by Cannon's Rib Express, a rib and sandwich counter with patio seating, located at 5410 Northeast 33rd Avenue. Dinner was provided by Kuya's Cuisine, a Filipino restaurant located inside the Filipino American Center of Portland at 8917 Southeast Dark Street.
And this is KBOO Portland, coming up at 9, which is next, because it's 9:01 a.m. On Beloved Community, host John Shuck speaks with Sarah Jaffe about her new book, Necessary Trouble, Americans in Revolt, a look at the new activism that has arisen since the crash of 2008. Then at 10, it's Air Cascadia and Flashpoints filling out the hour before the incomparable Radio Zine at 11, with this week featuring The Digital Divide with host Rabia Yeaman, speaking with cyberpunk author and former Sado Nation band member John Shirley in the studio. That's coming up right here on your community radio, so stay tuned.
From KBOO in Portland, Oregon, and the Pacifica Radio Network, this is The Beloved Community.
The aftermath of nonviolence is the creation of the beloved community. The aftermath of nonviolence is redemption. The aftermath of nonviolence is reconciliation. The aftermath of violence, however, is bitterness. And this is the thing I'm concerned about. Let us fight passionately and unrelentingly for the goal of justice and freedom. But let's be sure that our hands are clean in the struggle. Let us never fight with falsehood and violence and hate and malice, but always fight with love, so that when the day comes that the walls of segregation have completely crumbled in Montgomery, that we will be able to live with people as our brothers and sisters.
On The Beloved Community, we address the philosophical and spiritual foundations for nonviolence, activism, political engagement, and peace building. We also hear voices of those who are building The Beloved Community right here in Portland. The goal is to gain inspiration, solidarity, wisdom, and insight for your own activism. I'm John Shuck. Today on The Beloved Community, I speak with Sarah Jaffe. Sarah Jaffe is a Nation Institute fellow and an independent journalist. She's written for The Nation, In These Times, Washington Post, Atlantic, and is the co-host of Dissent Magazine's Belabored podcast. We're going to discuss her book, Necessary Trouble, Americans in Revolt. The book has received a great deal of praise. Truth Out called Necessary Trouble one of the most essential books of the year. And as Sarah and I are discussing her book during the beginning of our membership drive, she generously has provided copies of Necessary Trouble as thank you gifts for a donation to KBOO. Folks are waiting by the phone right now. You can be a member by calling 877 877-500-5266. That number is 877-500-5266. Welcome, Sarah, to the Beloved Community.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You know, what I get from reading your book is that we should be hopeful and energized about the creativity and possibilities regarding activism. Do you intend to make us feel hopeful about that?
I do. You know, I had a friend read a draft of this book before I turned it in, and she said, you know, this made me angry, and it made me feel better about myself because it made me feel like things weren't my fault. And that was exactly what I wanted to hear, to make people fired up and ready to go.
Your research for this book was to hit the streets and talk to people about what they're feeling and doing. Talk a little bit about that. What did you do and see?
Yeah, so I have been, I was the labor editor at Alternet when I came up with the idea for this book, and I had been covering Occupy Wall Street and things like that. And, you know, obviously people were even interested in hiring a labor editor because of the protest in Wisconsin in 2011. And so I was covering a lot of this stuff, and I started to think about, like, well, maybe there's actually something going on here that is, you know, that we're in what Francis Fox Piven calls a new cycle of protest. And that means that we're going to see more. And that certainly happened. You know, 2012, I started thinking about this book. 2013, 2014, we saw the Fight for 15, our Walmart strikes, the beginnings of Black Lives Matter. And that has only grown bigger. And then this year, of course, we have this kind of off-the-wall presidential election. Once I convinced a publisher that there was actually a protest movement going on that they wanted to publish a book on, I was able to actually go do some traveling. So I went to North Carolina to talk to people who were involved in Moral Mondays. I went to St. Louis and talked to the people who'd been involved in the Ferguson protests. Went to Seattle, where they were the first major city to have a $15 an hour minimum wage. And of course, the first place in the country to have a $15 an hour minimum wage was SeaTac, Washington. And so I was able to go there and talk to the workers and the local officials who made that happen. It's been a really interesting experience because I think a lot of New York journalists don't get out of New York very often.
And what you found when you talked to these people was that sense that it isn't personal, or they felt it was personal, their problems. But really, as they came together, they found, no, there are political causes for these problems.
Right. And it's very interesting. One of the people that the stories that I keep reading and keep getting asked about is Nancy Daniel, who begins my chapter on debt and debt resistance. And, you know, she was this woman who had worked all her life. She had her condo that was the first one she'd bought after she'd been divorced with her own money, her own credit. And she lost one job after September 11th in that recession. She lost another job where that company decided to move from outside of Atlanta, where she lives, to somewhere in Texas for even lower wages. And so, after that, she was in her, mid to late 50s as this is happening. And it's harder and harder to get a job at that age, especially she worked in publicity. And, you know, she's watching the jobs she's applying for get given to people who are half her age. And so when she starts to find that, when she starts to get letters about her mortgage that are threatening to foreclose on her house, she doesn't, she's thinking I'm a bad person. I didn't pay my debts. This is my personal failure. And when she finally reached out for help and found the people at Occupy Homes Atlanta, just an Occupy Wall Street spinoff that did foreclosure relief work, they introduced her to other people, and they talked to her about shame very directly and said, there is no shame here. This is not your fault, and really talked about the structural problems that created the foreclosure wave that saw, somewhere around 6 million homes foreclosed upon.
And part of this strategy of this new neoliberalism is to really put the blame on the victims and increase that level of shame.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really... I don't want to dig too deep into talking about neoliberalism because all your listeners will go to sleep. But I think that there is a very specific way that under the last 30 or 40 years of neoliberal capitalism, that shame and personal responsibility and your personal, like the privatization of public goods has also played out in the privatization of problems and our everything that we have to do, everything that we have to deal with, everything that we struggle with is pushed back onto us. It's your problem, nobody else. Your boss doesn't have to provide you with health insurance. It's your problem, right? Or your mortgage is, you know, going underwater at the same time as millions of other people, but it just must be your fault.
And so what is happening with these activist movements is that it is becoming an empowering thing because people are discovering right. that they have a lot in common, even when they might have had differences.
Right.
For example, one of the surprises of your book is the Tea Party. And is it true that those on the left may have more in common with those folks than we think?
Yes, I definitely think so. I think that, you know, it's easy to overstate that. I don't want to say that we're all going to have a kumbaya moment. And everybody's going to come together, people who voted for Bernie Sanders and people who voted for Donald Trump. But we are mad at the same things a lot of the time. And the question is how we figure out how to agree on solutions to those things. But, you know, when I'm talking to Tea Party people, they're mad that the banks got bailed out with $700 billion of our money. They're mad that, you know, that they're losing jobs or that somebody else lost a job or that their, you know, their retirement savings lost value in the recession. They're mad at very much the same things. And the question of how we actually figure out how to talk to each other is a really important one. But I see some of that in some of these movements where people are really kind of coming together over things that they didn't think they had anything in common.
Also, understanding who really the opponent is in all of this.
Yeah, and that is, you know, I think that that's a big question of the difference between the Tea Party and Occupy, right? If the Tea Party, if you have people in the Tea Party who are mad because the banks got bailed out, but they're mad at people who got sold, you know, fraudulent mortgages, you have to, you know, flip that script and talk about who did the selling of the fraudulent mortgages to millions of people around the country. But it is a question of, like, you know, now people are mad. Now who are they blaming? And that will tell you a lot about the structure that movement's going to take.
You're listening to The Beloved Community on KBOO. I'm John Scheck. I'm speaking with Sarah Jaffe, author of Necessary Trouble, Americans in Revolt. We're going now to our friends from the KBOO membership drive. They will let you know how you can make good trouble and support KBOO and perhaps pick up a copy of Necessary Trouble as a thank you gift.
Oh, I love that. Making good trouble, especially in what Sarah Jaffe has been talking about against neoliberalism and this shame-based privatization of problems that we experience. We are a community and we are so much stronger together. What we're asking for you to do is to join us in this community by calling 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO. Or go online at kboo.fm and become part of the community. Become part of this group of people that are looking to combat these issues of not being able to recognize that we have this commonality, that problems in the system are actually systematic. And so I urge you to join us. Join us now in becoming a stronger community of radio enthusiasts. 877-500-5266.
And it's a matching period, so there's never been a better time to make a little contribution to your entire community when you call 877-500-5266. We're not asking you to give us something. We're asking you to put a little bit in the pot to keep the community strong. It's a radio commons. It's a radio university. And it's there for you every hour of every day for nigh on 50 years. You decide what it's worth to you, but ask yourself, in contrast, what life would be like without real voices, real people, access to your own airwaves. Think about that and decide what that's worth to you. It's really not the amount as much as it is standing up and being counted and getting involved. Please call right now during this matching period, 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO.
Exactly. If you call now, then your membership will be doubled by a generous contribution by Diana Stewart, who is matching the next $250 in donations. So call 877-500-5266 and take advantage of that. And take advantage of the fact that there are people in your community, yourself included, dear listener, who may not be a member already, that we have solidarity in this, in this struggle.
I think you're absolutely right. You make a great point, Becky, that it's from everyone according to their ability, right? So some people may put in a little more, some people may put in a little less, but each contribution is Herculean in its value. And that's what we mean when we say we're not asking you to worry too much about the amount. It's that you stand up and be counted. It's that you make a call. If that's pennies a day, if that's dollars a day, if that's anything in between, remind yourself that no other station is soliciting your input quite the way the mighty 90.7 is. So do get on the phone right now during this matching period. Introduce yourself and get counted. Toll free, 877-500-5266.
You're listening to The Beloved Community on KBOO. I'm John Scheck. I'm speaking with Sarah Jaffe, author of Necessary Trouble, Americans in Revolt. You spoke with John Lewis, a congressman and former leader of SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. The title of your book, Necessary Trouble, came from that conversation. Was that conversation somewhat pivotal for you?
I think it was really fascinating. And I was interviewing him about his book, March, which now is three volumes of a memoir told in comics. And I was talking to him while the Dream Defenders were occupying the Florida State Capitol after George Zimmerman was acquitted for killing Trayvon Martin. And, I had just talked to some of the folks from the Dream Defenders and written an article about that. And here I was sitting down with John Lewis and going, what advice do you have for young people? And that's where he said, sometimes you got to find a way to get in the way and create some good trouble, necessary trouble. And that's, of course, where the book title comes from. And, people ask me if there's like a generational tension right now, if there are older people who don't understand what the so-called millennials are up to, right? And I don't think that that's true. I talk to a lot of people who are, or are my parents' age, who are involved in these movements. I'm talking to people like Nancy Daniel, who is, in her late 50s, who is looking at retirement in the post-crisis era. And I talk to people like John Lewis, who are, saying to the young people, like, yes, you do have to find a way to disrupt business as usual in order to get your voices heard.
Yeah, let's talk about disruption. You quoted also Reverend William Barber of Moral Mondays in North Carolina by saying, our job is to shock the nation's heart again. And these movements are social defibrillators. Tell us about the importance of disruption, where you've seen that happen.
Yeah, I thought that was such a great line, wasn't it? We've had protests. It's not like there were no protests in the Bush era, certainly, right? There were massive, massive marches around the world against the Iraq War. There were all of these things happening. But what we've seen in the last, 6, 7, 8 years is that people are really finding ways to more effectively hold up business as usual, right? To more effectively force people to pay attention. So whether that's, occupying a park and refusing to leave, whether that's taking over the Wisconsin or the Florida State Capitol, whether that's blocking a highway, whether that's getting, several hundred people arrested in the North Carolina state legislature, you are doing something that is impossible to ignore, and that is making the business that you are opposed to harder to achieve. So, in Wisconsin, they were aiming to effectively block the passage of a bill. In North Carolina, they're aiming to disrupt the endless process of a procedure of bad bills through the state legislature. When the workers go on strike, obviously striking is a way to shut down the business that they work at that depends on their labor. And so we're seeing all of these different ways to do that and to really, I love to talk about disruption because the tech billionaires really love the term disruption, right? Mark Zuckerberg and the Uber guys and everybody else likes to talk about how they're disrupting this business and that business. And this is just disruption is progress. But disruption is actually not the tool of rich people. It's actually the way that, you know, poor people, working people have been able to hear that, get their voices heard.
Yeah, the protests, or let's say the strikes or the walkouts on Black Friday with Walmart, for example, that disrupting it, very strategic.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and to figure out, right, our Walmart, the organization for Organization United for Respect at Walmart is what it stands for, has been really effective at, you know, if you'll forgive me the sports metaphor, punching above their weight class. They have a fairly small group of organized workers. They have an even smaller group of workers who are willing to take risks. They have a decent amount of silent members who are supportive of the organizing, but for various reasons have not been, you know, have been afraid to go on strike. And they have, with a combination of picking strategic dates and times in Walmart's, you know, business cycle, like Black Friday, obviously, and really just effectively, you know, advocating for themselves with the wider community, getting a lot of community support and getting a lot of press, they have been able to, you know, shock Walmart into giving a pretty, you know, not enough of a raise, but a raise to its entire workforce that it will never, of course, admit came about because its workers went on strike. But
well, you know, the Walmart story. Yeah, the Walmart story was really revealing to me. First of all, I didn't realize until you said how big it was. I mean, what was it? The one of that quote, bigger than anything except the U.S. and Chinese armies.
Yeah, the world's third largest employer, and that is, yes, including militaries.
That's just colossal. Yeah, go ahead.
And that's just the direct employees of Walmart. That's not counting all the people who work for factories that make things that are sold at Walmart, the people who work for, you know, third-party companies that do miscellaneous work at Walmart. That's just the people who are employed by Walmart. That's how big it is. So when you add in all the other people who are doing work for things that, you know, that end up getting sold at Walmart or getting the things that are sold at Walmart to Walmart, you have just an astronomical number of people who are somehow, you know, making the Waltons richer.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Sarah Jaffe. She's the author of Necessary Trouble, Americans in Revolt. Back to Walmart, and one might wonder, well, why aren't these laborers organized? And what has been left out of the labor movement that kind of peaked in the 50s, and what's changing?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the labor movement did itself no favors by assuming that certain workers were unorganizable. And the workers who were assumed to be unorganizable, right, were very specific workers. They were in, you know, in retail, in places, in service jobs, in places that were majority women, in places that were majority people of color. And so to assume that, like, you couldn't organize people who weren't on a factory floor was a huge, you know, I mean, it was obviously a huge mistake because we're seeing it corrected right now. But it was also, it was a particular reflection of who was, you know, who was in charge, who was valued. And the fact that we're seeing the most, you know, the most growth and the most innovative tactics coming out of those industries now is really, you know, it's showing how much stronger labor would be now if it had, you know, thought about these workers as a serious cornerstone of its, you know, its strategy for winning power decades ago.
One of the things, areas that you talk about is horizontalism, that leaderless movement in which people take initiative and become leaders rather than kind of following orders from the top down, from the labor bosses, so to speak. So I was thinking it was kind of like an open source activism. And again, on your chapter on Walmart, this horizontalism is the important corrective to the structure of the old style unions. So can you talk a little bit more about how the employees of Walmart are organizing?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that we're seeing in the reason that horizontalism is so popular right now is that we're dealing with a moment of massive just loss of faith in elites and the powerful and the people who are supposed to be in charge, right? Americans have, you know, I like to quote the poll that Congress regularly polls, but lower than cockroaches, witches, and Nickelback. you know, and there's certainly no love for the bankers or the wealthy in general. And so there's really this loss of faith in leadership from above in general. And so if that's true, then how do we organize ourselves differently? And people are experimenting with that. And then also there's just the question of the internet, right? That it has made organizing certain types of events, certain ways for movements to spread a whole lot easier because you can just replicate something. You know, people can write up their strategy for something that they did, some tactic, and put it online and say, here you go, do this. You know, people could watch a video from Occupy Wall Street in New York and spread it somewhere else. In the case of our Walmart, you can have a small core of organizers and worker organizers, I mean, people who are still working at Walmart who are organizing this organization themselves, who can go online. They have Facebook groups. They have, you know, Twitter. They can talk to each other across the country, and they can say to somebody, you know, somebody who lives in Maryland can say to somebody who lives in Texas, like, actually, we have the same exact problem at our store. It's probably the company and not just your individual manager or not just this particular place. This is probably a thing that actually comes from corporate, comes from the very, very, very centrally controlled Walmart corporate office in Bentonville, Arkansas, right, that literally controls the temperature in the stores from Bentonville. When I went to the Walmart shareholders meeting, there was a big, they were announcing the things that they were doing for their associates to show that they were appreciated. And one of them was like raising the temperature in the stores.
Like 1 degree or something, was it? Yeah. It was like small.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah. Wow, this yeah. is an Orwellian so small. World.
Right. And they were putting Our People Makes a Difference back on their name badges as opposed to Save Money, Live Better or whatever it had been before that. And like, I'm like, this is, you know, I mean, that's all well and good. If people were cold across the country, then good that they're raising the temperature. But like, how about a raise?
Right. Now, you talked about social media. It's almost, it can't really overestimate this. Now, it's been criticized. Oh, you're just clicking activism. But really, it really has helped on the ground as well, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, the real question is whether you're just clicking on something or whether you are clicking on something and then going to a protest in your town.
Right.
Right. So when I was in Chicago the week that, that George Zimmerman was acquitted for killing Trayvon Martin. And I knew fewer people in Chicago then than I do now, but I was, you know, I had been there for a couple of days and I just looked online and found where there was going to be a protest and went down to see what was going on. And that was just, you know, I was able to do that in a city that I don't live in, where I didn't really know anybody, and find my way there because it was on Facebook. And so, you know, Facebook continues to change its algorithms like every 3 weeks, depending on what Mark Zuckerberg had for breakfast or something. So it's not, you know, I wrote an article a few weeks ago about this for Moyers and Company because it had already changed, you know, how people are using social media had already changed since the book went to press. And to talk about the way that, you know, when you're dealing with these social media companies that do not have your best interest at heart necessarily, they have the bottom line of Facebook or Twitter at heart. How do you deal with that when you don't control these media that you're using to organize? Because it's an ongoing question, and it's you can see it when you see people from like the Movement for Black Lives getting involved in fights over net neutrality and saying we need to have a free and open internet because that's how we have been able to communicate with each other and organize.
I'm speaking with Sarah Jaffe about her book Necessary Trouble: Americans in Revolt. This is The Beloved Community. I'm John Schuck. We're now joined by our friends from the KBOO Membership Drive. They will let you know how you can support KBOO and perhaps pick up a copy of Necessary Trouble as a thank you gift.
That's right. John, we have Necessary Trouble by Sarah Jaffe, who you've been listening to, who has been saying some pretty radical stuff. That is available to you with a $75 membership if you call 877-500-5266.
And if you do that right now, you will get to take part in our matching period. Thanks to Diana Stewart making a generous offer to match the next $250 in donations. So your $75 gets you a copy of Necessary Trouble and also becomes $150 for the mighty 90.7 without any extra labor on your behalf. Why don't you call right now, please, 877-500-5266. That's a toll-free number, 877-500-KBOO. On the first day of our fall membership drive, we're asking you to get involved with your wallet just the way you've been involved with your hearts and your ears and your minds for decades now. Please call right now, 877-500-5266.
This concept of necessary trouble is something that speaks very clearly, I think, to what we do here at KBOO. She was just talking about how when you organize, the prevalent thought was that you could only do it with factory workers. But in reality, you can organize with everybody. You can organize your neighbors in order to make sure that the park looks nice, or you can organize your friends when you have, you know, ideas that you share. You want to, you know, ensure that people are not served injustice, or if you have a particular concern. KBOO has been organizing folks here in Portland for nearly 50 years in terms of free thought, media justice, equitable access. That's what KBOO has been doing. And so if you believe in those values, call 877-500-5266.
I dare say we don't even need to include the if. People have been listening for a long time. They have already decided that. And we understand, you know, if people are calling you up for your money, you might be a bit circumspect about that. But what we also know is that there is a giving level that's right for everyone who's listening right now, particularly during a matching period. And I just want to emphasize what you're saying, Becky, as far as organizing. KBOO is a prime mover, and every time people are listening, they're organized in a default way with everyone else who is listening, because you're listening to the same things. There's a harmonic convergence that comes literally through the airwaves, and we're asking you to make a small contribution to make sure that that signal stays strong and available, not just in Portland, not just in Hood River, not just in the Willamette Valley, but through the Googles and the Interboobs, and that is always there for you. And that's part of what you're making possible as well. Think about that organizing going out to almost all of the 200 or so countries on earth. That is what's happening through KBOO.FM. And we're asking you to support that right now and do it during a matching period so that your money will be doubled. There's no contribution that is too small and none too large when you call 877-500-5266.
Our appreciation is multitudinous. We're able to make radio because you support us and keep us independent. This is a new show. Beloved Community by John Chuck has been, I think, on the air. Maybe this is the second show, and it's incredible. I want to drive home the point that John is a volunteer, and a lot of us here are volunteers on the radio 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to bring free thought, to bring excellent music, to bring incredible interviews like this one with Sarah Jaffe. If you enjoy this, you should call and get the book, Necessary Trouble by Sarah Jaffe, for a $75 minimum pledge. For a breakdown for that, it's like, what, less than $7 a month?
Yeah, I think I don't have my calculator in front of me, but if I recall, $60 is $5 a month. So $75 is not a lot of money, but it's all relative to what you can do. We're not asking folks to be worried so unduly about the amount. We can't say this too many times. It's getting your name in the good book. And you're not giving it to us. You are placing it in a community trust that stands here as a monument at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. It doesn't go away. It's not in the ether. It's a real, tangible thing where we provide access, training, and programming to everyone who will receive it. And we're asking you to help make that possible. Whether that's pennies, nickels, and dimes, whether that's dollars, it's not really the issue. The issue is to add more people to the KBOO Good Book, particularly during a matching period. Thank you so much, Diana Stewart, for putting your money where your mouth is. And now, dear listener, it's time to put some money where your ears are by calling 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO.
The existence of healthy, thriving radio communities like KBOO says something about all of us. It says that we need and we want that expressive freedom to extend to people who don't have a voice, people who are working at Walmarts for less than they should, who are appreciated by raising the temperature in the store 1 degree. I mean, like, we are here to give voice to that. 877-500-5266. Call and make your voice known. Be part of our community.
We're making trouble on the beloved community, providing wisdom, insight, solidarity, grit, guts, and nonviolence for your activism. I'm John Schuck, and I'm speaking with Sarah Jaffe. Her new book is Necessary Trouble, Americans in Revolt. You start off really the book with the financial crisis of 2008, and you write about how one movement leads to another. As I was going through your book, it's, oh, this piece picked up here and picked up there, not necessarily by design, but evolution. For instance, Occupy Wall Street didn't end when finally everyone just went home. It kind of lives on, shaping movements that followed it. What did we learn collectively from Occupy Wall Street that's helpful now?
I mean, we learned quite a few things. One of them was that the police will crack down very, very hard on your movement, which is actually, you know, what we saw. You know, we saw that pay off in a way where a lot of the young people who might not have otherwise gotten involved with Black Lives Matter, you know, young people who are not from communities that are heavily policed, got involved in that, having had the experience for once of you know, police brutality. But we also heard this, you know, the we are the 99%, and the 99% and the 1% framing was something that had really been hard to say in this country, right? And conservatives would freak out about class warfare and say, you know, oh, you can't say that. What do you, you know, how dare you blame these people who just got their, you know, the wealth that equals the bottom 40% of America's wealth, and that's the Walton family, of course. They just got it through hard work. And when we were able to actually say, you know, no, we are the people who are, you know, working and struggling, and there is this tiny group of people who are benefiting from all of our work, all of, you know, the mortgages and the credit cards and the student loans that they sell us, and this is actually benefiting somebody for us to be struggling, that was a really powerful moment, and we've seen echoes of that everywhere. And so, like, when I go back to talking about our Walmart, Dan Schlademan from our Walmart says that, yeah, without the way that Occupy started to talk about things, it was much harder to talk about the Waltons and talk about that statistic that now I can rattle off about, you know, the Waltons having the same amount of money as, like, the bottom half of America or close to it. And so we really started to think about sort of class, not in the way that, like, you know, class normally gets discussed in America, which is like, you know, is the white working class going to vote Republican this election or something, but actually to be like, who has power in this country and how is that determined?
You know, the movements you describe are not necessarily part of the election cycle, aside from perhaps the Bernie Sanders campaign. So they're longer term, not focused on, for example, who's going to be president. Right. So, but how important might be this presidential election?
I mean, you know, it's been interesting because it shows that people are still really, really angry out there in this country. I think that both the Trump and the Sanders campaign show that people are really angry and are looking for solutions that aren't sort of the middle of the road of both parties. And so, you know, when you look at the Donald Trump Make America Great Again slogan, right? He's talking to people who feel like the country isn't great. Now they have very specific ideas about what's making this country not great that I think are incorrect. But that's still speaking to a sense that people have that things are not going well. And when we're looking at Bernie Sanders talking about the billionaires, talking about, you know, the system is rigged in favor of the wealthy, talking about how we need to counter that, we need things like free college, we need things like free healthcare, universal taxpayer-funded college and healthcare, we should say. Mm-hmm. It's not free, but it's you know, it's universally available based on the fact that you are a person and not based on the fact that you can make enough money or that your parents made enough money. And so it's been interesting as a signpost for where we are. I think nobody expected, least of all Bernie Sanders, that 12 million people in this country were going to vote for a guy who called himself a socialist, although you all in Seattle might have seen that one coming a little bit before the rest of us. And we have to continue to look beyond the election. I think that that's the really important point here, is to say, like, whatever happens in November, whoever wins, these fights are going to keep going. And sometimes, no matter who's in office, you can actually, with the right pressure, change their minds about some things.
Well, you know, I thought that happened after 2008 and people voted Obama in as the peace president and all of these kinds of things that and what happened is seemed all of the activism just died. I mean, in terms of, you know, protesting wars and all of that kind of stuff, that we put people put a lot of their cards on Obama on the figure. And this is a very different movement now, isn't it?
Yes, I think so. I think that there's not going to be a grace period for President Hillary Clinton, if there is President Hillary Clinton. I don't think she gets a sort of period of time where people are going, well, just let them figure it out. Coming out of the Bush years, right, everything seemed so bad. And the question was always, like, how do we get him out? And how do we keep from replicating that experience? And so it was, you know, we have to elect somebody else. We have to elect Obama. We have to elect somebody who's going to be different. And then we have this massive trauma of this massive financial crisis, this massive economic crisis that, you know, shook the world and is still having repercussions everywhere. That we, you know, or like, okay, maybe this is going to be the chance that Obama has to be a really transformative, exciting president who puts forward like a new deal. And I remember all those magazine articles so well, you know, and it just didn't happen. And we got kind of a lukewarm stimulus bill that was mostly tax cuts. And, you know, the employment rate has been like slowly inching upward. And so we're supposed to think that everything's fine. But of course, I think, like I said, I think this election cycle and all of these protest movements have reminded people that we're not fine.
Well, I think, I think even if Hillary does get elected, I think now, perhaps with these new protests, we're going to put her feet to the fire a lot more than we did with Obama.
Yeah, I think that there's no, you know, that period, I don't see it coming. I don't think that the people who, you know, whether or not people vote for her, people keep asking me, you know, what are the Occupy people going to do? Are they going to vote for Hillary Clinton? And I'm like, some people are going to vote for Hillary Clinton. Some people are going to vote for Jill Stein. Some people might stay home. Some people might write in, you know, whoever, their own name. Like, I can't tell you what people are going to do in terms of voting, but I can tell you that I think that they're going to keep organizing and they're going to keep protesting no matter who is in the White House, no matter who is in Congress, because that's actually how we've shifted things this much so far. And because, again, things aren't getting better. And the sort of Zephyr Teachout, who's running for Congress in New York, called the 90s robot politics, which I thought was a great line, is just not going to be enough right now.
Sarah Jaffe is my guest on The Beloved Community. I'm John Schock. We're discussing her new book, Necessary Trouble, Americans in Revolt. You can be a troublemaker, too, by supporting your favorite troublemaking radio station, KBOO. Here are more troublemakers to tell you how and how you might pick up a copy of Necessary Trouble as a thank you gift.
Making trouble is easy, but it ain't free. You got to keep the lights on and the transmitter working. Thank you, John. My name's Justin. I'm joined by Becky on the first morning of our fall membership drive, asking you to get involved right now. Show your support for Beloved Community and do it during a matching period. Thanks to Diana Stewart. Call right now, 877-500-5266 to engage in a little checkbook activism. You do a little troublemaking along with us famous troublemakers. You can do that online at kboo.fm or just come on down in person on this lovely day, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. Come see the People's Radio. It's your radio too. Or if that's not possible just at this moment, call right now and have your money doubled at 877-500-KBOO. Oh,
we've been listening to Sarah Jaffe speak with John Schock on this amazing new show. You can call right now and get that book, Necessary Trouble, Americans in Revolt, for $75, which breaks down to less than $7 a month, in fact. And if you call now, that will be doubled. So you make the $75 membership pledge, it will turn into $150. 877-500-5266 is the number to call, or go online. KBOO.FM is the place to be.
This just in, Becky. $6.25 a month.
Oh, that's the
what
number.
We're talking. $6.20. Now, we're not hung up on numbers, friends.
Oh, no.
But all the numbers come to add up to 100, and that is the percent of money that the People's Radio has to serve the people.
Yeah.
So, you know, that 100% is whatever it is. It may be a little more, it may be a little less. There's one way to make sure it's a little more, and that's by you participating, dear listener. You picking up the phone and saying, you know what? My life has been enriched, entertained, enthused. I have been angered, I have been motivated, I have been delighted. In fact, I need a thesaurus to think of all of the experiences my community radio station has provided for my life. And not just my life, my family's life, my neighbor's life, my colleague's life, and people I don't even know, near and far, are all being enriched by KBOO Community Radio, the oldest freestanding community radio station in the nation. It might be easy to take us for granted when we've been around that long, but please don't do that. Pick up the phone and call right now with whatever pennies, nickels, and dimes seem right to you. 877-500-5266.
Where else are you going to listen to a meaningful discussion on class? A meaningful discussion on class, not simply that what Sarah Jaffe had brought up, you know, like, I wonder what the working person's going to vote for in this particular election. No, we talk about it in a way where we deconstruct the status quo. And we've been doing that for almost 50 years. Call 877-500-5266 because you value that. You value a critical stance on life, and you value being able to speak to everybody about the issues in a way that's better than superficial.
And our listeners are savvy because our listeners already know that every 2 years and every 4 years, mainstream shrieking heads go on and on about the State of the Union and what's to be done about it all. With no depth of analysis, mm-hmm. with no diversity of voice, all's in the poorly shrouded attempt to deliver their audience into the hands of advertisers. Meanwhile, every hour of every day since 1968, the voices at KBOO Community Radio have been unpacking, deconstructing, analyzing, and bringing in as diverse a number of voices as possible to talk on all sides of a subject and then let you sort it out. So please, right now, decide what that's worth to you. Only you know what it's worth to you, and when everyone gives a little, it doesn't need to be worth the moon and the stars to you today. It just means in that online at KB, or I'm going to call up 500-5266.
And you can husband in the occupied. And
we've
and
been doing
sevens. Thank you, Diana Stewart.
Community. I'm John Shaw. Locality. You write that the issues of racism and sexism, of economic and social rights, had to be addressed all at once, not out of an urge to be politically correct or even simply to broaden the size of the coalition, but because they affect people at their intersections. We are a number of different things. Talk a little bit more about intersectionality and why that was why that's so important.
Yeah, I think that there's this, you know, sort of tendency, and we saw this again play out in this presidential election in really irritating, grating ways to me, at least, that this idea that if you talk about class, then you're talking about something that white people have. And if you talk about race, then you're talking about police brutality, but not the fact that, you know, Black and Latino people are concentrated in low-wage jobs. That we're talking about, you know, when you're talking about mortgages and foreclosures, then we're not talking about the fact that, you know, the foreclosure crisis disproportionately affected Black and Latino people, and it did so because they had been disproportionately pushed into subprime loans, into predatory loans, in some cases into predatory second mortgages that they didn't need, which literally stripped away the only wealth that some people's families had just begun to build. But these are not issues that hit people just in one way, that they affect people in, you know, ways that reflect how much power they have in society, and they affect people as whole people.
The series of events since, say, 2008, all of these movements working together, intersecting with one another, has really caused a great deal of consciousness raising, it seems. How do you measure that? But would you say that we're getting smarter, maybe?
I always hope that we're getting smarter. I always hope. I have no idea how one would measure that. But I think that we're seeing things, that we're seeing people sort of understand and talk about issues in a way that had been off the table before 2008, before, you know, the last few years. We really have opened up bigger, broader discussions that are talking about systems, and they're not just talking about laws or who's going to be president, but they're talking about, you know, if the crisis in 2008 was a crisis of capitalism, then like 51% of people 18 to 29 in this country now say that they don't like capitalism. Like, we're looking at these big, big conversations about how we want the world to be and how we want this country to be, that aren't just sort of make America great again, but that are literally like, what do we think is important? What do we think matters? What do we think freedom looks like? And that's a fascinating conversation. And it's, of course, a struggle that's going to go on forever, really. But to talk about movements that are moving from like very straightforward demands, like fire this police officer that killed this unarmed person, or, you know, pass a $15 an hour minimum wage, to like, okay, what comes after that? What comes after that is, we want you to take all of this money that you're putting into policing. Right here in Seattle, they want to put a bunch of money into a new fancy police precinct, and people are going, hi, we have a homelessness crisis here. And so, right, when we're talking about that, it's like, okay, do we need to spend that money on a police precinct, or maybe we need to spend that money on homes for people who are sleeping on the street? And how do we think about that? And then after that, you know, what comes next after that? What's the next battle to make the world a little bit more like we want it to be?
Well, one of the scary things in your book was the militarization of the police, mm-hmm. and of everything. Take a moment to talk about our situation there and what are some responses to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's on one level, it's unwise to over-focus on the militarization of the police, because the problem for so many people is, you know, policing, period, right? Eric Garner was not killed by a tank. He was killed by a chokehold. And so, you know, I don't want to over-focus on that. But at the same time, we're seeing these problems that are, you know, social problems that result from lack of funding or things like that, treated with this police force that not only has literally, you know, military weapons that is rolling down the street in a mine-resistant vehicle because, you know, unarmed teenage protesters have mines or something. But it affects the way we think about everything, that, like, the solution to a problem is always to bomb it or shoot it. And that doesn't work. When you there was a study that just came out that showed that something like 50% of the people who had been shot by police have mental illness. And, like, we have no system, nothing to deal with, no one to call, other than the police, if somebody is having a crisis, if somebody is in distress, if somebody is, you know, acting out, whatever it is, there's no, like, trained mental health team you can call that will come help them. You just have police, and the police are trained to shoot. And that's how we deal with problems. And so I think that is, you know, it's something that we look at in our foreign policy. And if you look at things like the Vision for Black Lives document that just came out last month, there is an explicit connection made there between American foreign policy and American domestic policy when it comes to policing.
So it's time to make trouble, ladies and gentlemen. Sarah Jaffe, my guest, Necessary Trouble is her book, Necessary Trouble, Americans in Revolt. Sarah, thank you so much for this book and for being with me today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Beloved Community. The Beloved Community provides inspiration, solidarity, wisdom, and insight for your own activism as necessary troublemaking. The Beloved Community is heard on every second Friday at 9 a.m. on KBOO. Do give KBOO a call and donate to a necessary radio station. The phone is 877-500-5266. Troublemakers are taking phone calls right now, 877-500-5266. And you can also become a member online at kboo.fm. I'm John Shuck. Get a podcast of The Beloved Community, as well as podcasts of my weekly series on Pacifica called Progressive Spirit at progressivespirit.net.
Well, thank you so much, John, for an interesting interview with Sarah Jaffe, with whom we have a book. But I want to just let you know that we have a matching period right now. You can call and have your dollar doubled, 877-500-5266. Now's the time.
We ask you to remember all of the reasons that you listen to KBOO, that KBOO affects your life, because we know in the final analysis, you don't give for our reasons, you give for your reasons. Sometimes you'll hear us say, well, we need this and we need that. And of course, that's not exactly accurate. It's our shepherding of the people's resources, mm-hmm. saying this is what the people's resources require. But what we're really pointing out is that we know that you give for your reasons, and we think that we give a lot of reasons every hour of every day. And so we're asking you to think about some of those reasons. It's why most of you have been listening for quite some time, although quite a few of you have never made that call. And I can understand that. There are a lot of organizations fighting for your hard-won pennies, nickels, and dimes. But please stop and think about all the things that KBOO does for the community, particularly now during a matching period where your $5 becomes $10, your $100 becomes $200, and call right now, toll-free, 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO.
KBOO has been opening bigger, broader discussions, just like this author has talked about, for almost 50 years. We want to talk about what we want the world to be, talking about what do we think freedom looks like. That discussion should come from a number of different voices, from a bunch of different perspectives, and especially to those people who don't have representation in mainstream media. So we're here to lift up those voices and to become a community over and over and over with your help. 877-500-5266 is the number to call. You can donate online, kboo.fm. That's kboo.fm.
That's a really important point that you make, Becky, because we are not here to be necessarily the number one station or to, you know, bring you exactly every little bit of what you like specifically. We're here to do what is left undone by other sources. We are here mm-hmm. to lend voice to the voiceless. We're here to bring the perspectives that aren't covered by the shrieking heads on the other side of the dial. Now, sometimes that is wonderful. Sometimes it's entertaining. Sometimes it's new music that you've never heard or a fresh perspective. Mm-hmm. And indeed, sometimes it's difficult listening. In other words, we're talking about the real suffering of actual people, both near and far. And all of that together is what we think of as this sort of quilt of truth. And it needs all the voices, at least as many voices as mm-hmm. we can cram into it. And the only way we do that is by keeping the lights on and the doors open in order to fulfill the basic mission of the foundation, which is to provide access, training, and programming to everyone who will have it, with a specific mind to make sure that we are bringing to air that which otherwise is left undone. Mm-hmm. So there's a reason to consider supporting KBOO, either at kboo.fm or toll-free from anywhere in North America, 877-500-KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Clinton Street Stomp, Saturday, September 10th at 6:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. The Clinton Street Stomp is an all-ages, unamplified, all-acoustic showcase of early roots music hosted by Zach Bryson. Again, that's Clinton Street Stomp, Saturday, September 10th at 6:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Crema Coffee and Bakery. located at 2728 Southeast Ankeny, serving local coffee and baked goods every day from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Lunch was provided by Cannon's Rib Express, a rib and sandwich counter with patio seating, located at 5410 Northeast 33rd Avenue. Dinner was provided by Kuya's Cuisine, a Filipino restaurant located inside the Filipino-American Center of Portland at 8917 Southeast Dark Street.
KBOO's membership drive is coming up in September. Help us promote the work of this amazing station by following us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and now Snapchat, rating our app on the iTunes and Google Play Store, and joining our Facebook event for the upcoming membership drive. Oh, and don't forget to join or renew your membership. Just click donate on our website or app and start your monthly contribution to your community radio, KBOO.
And KBOO's fall membership drive has come. It's September. It's September 9th, and it's 9:59 a.m. at KBOO Portland. And it is time for you, friends and neighbors, to make the call. I'm putting out the call to you. It is now your turn to answer the call by making the call. 877-500-5266. Come down and see us in person at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. We're on 8th Avenue, right between Southeast Ankeny and East Burnside. Ankeny is, so far, still a pretty good bike route to get across town from east to west and vice versa. Come on down, take the bus. We're at 12 and 19 and 20 lines, all stop within a block or less of KBOO. Come on down and see us. Right now, in just a moment, my good friend Chris Andre is going to bring you Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary, followed at 10:15 with Flashpoints. And at 11 on the Digital Divide, host Robbie